This is Desiring God Behind the Blog. David Mathis, Tony Ranke, and Jonathan Parnell here. Joining us, Marshall Siegel, who's executive assistant to John Piper. He also does some writing here at the blog. We'll touch base with him, get some updates on Piper here later on. But today is May 15 when we're recording. A week ago today, we checked in with Ian and Larissa and also had a little recording here in town with the Gospel Coalition Twin Cities with John Piper. But let's go back a month ago today. April 15 was the day when the bombs exploded in Boston. And pretty soon after that, Tony Ranke helped us process what was going on in Boston, how we think through it as a Christian. Tony, tell us about that post.
Yeah. I mean, when tragedy happens like this one, I'm just bombarded with different emotions, you know, spiritually, and just different thoughts cross my mind. And so this was an opportunity just to sit down and sort of trace out what sort of thoughts come to mind when I see tragedy in the news. It actually starts with, you know, quite a bit of shock. You know, I can't believe that this really happened. I saw the pictures of the bombing on Twitter about 10 minutes before CNN picked it up. And so I didn't know exactly what I was looking at, just a cloud of dust. But once I heard that, you know, what had happened, I was shocked. You know, they started to see images and videos, close-up videos, and then started to hear some of the accounts of what happened on the scene.
And then honestly,
yeah, there's confusion, and so there's just all this shock, and then that for me that leads to like this anger, this holy vengeance, you know, that this cannot go unpunished. And I think a lot of people feel that, but that has to be tempered then with a prayer for the victims, prayer for the families of those who died. Then you get the sense of gratitude of all the military folks, the police that are on the scene, and. And the citizens who are, you know, carrying the wounded, and so it's just amazing. So you see this common grace at work, and then you're humbled by the fact that the evil that you see in those images is the evil that's rooted in all of us. All of us are quick to shed blood. I mean, it's in all of our hearts. And then there's an awe of the cross, because the cross comes about through the result of this type of vicious anger. You know, that's our hope, is in the cross that. Has been brought about by this anger. Then there's a stage of comfort. You know, you realize that God is in total sovereign control of everything that happens. Then you're again reminded of the victims and praying for them. And then you pray for the churches in the area and the pastors that are going to be addressing, you know, the Northeast and the coming Sunday. And then, you know, for me, then there's like this later stage where I start to pray for the perpetrators, mm-hmm. that they would be caught, that they would be convicted in their own mind of their own sin and evil, and see their need for the Savior. So for me, when tragedy like this happens, it's such a confusing time. And so for me, it was just a post where I was just trying to walk through all of the things I was feeling, most of them, I think, very biblical, and just trying to put categories to them and trying to hold together this jumbled package of responses. Mm. And I think I feel that every time, just intuitively. And this is an opportunity to really track how those thoughts were being processed.
The bombs exploded April 15. I believe it was the next day you put the thoughts together and just really kind of a raw catalog of the emotions we go through.
That's right.
A day later, then, Jonathan Parnell had some thoughts called Looking Evil in the Eye. Tell us about that, Jonathan.
Yeah, the idea behind the post was just trying to think about how we process evil and what we, of course, know about God's sovereignty and his how he takes all things, you know, Romans 8:28, and can work them together for good. I try to draw that out from an observation in the story of Joseph in Genesis 50. And really, the point, I think, is summed up when I say that God using evil things for our good does not make the evil things less evil. Mm-hmm. There can seem to be a, you know, the idea that if we jump to, oh, God can do good from this, that somehow we're dismissing the horror of the actual event, of the evil that took place. And that's not the case. And so I try to show that in the story of Joseph, an observation there, and then I have two implications from this truth, and it's first that we call evil evil, that we don't shy away from calling what's terrible terrible and evil evil. And then secondly, after we've done that and doing that, still doing that, we can also expect God to bring good. So I'm just trying to hold these things in balance of, yes, it's evil, and yes, God is strong enough, good enough, wise enough to bring about a good purpose for his name and for our good.
I think it was in the next day on April 18th that Marshall wrote, "Why Gosnell God? Why Boston?" Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was for sure born just out of personal devotion. So time reading through a Bible reading plan, which is amazing how God can speak to us just through the signed chapters for that day. But I was in Psalm 10, and I'm wrestling with the atrocities of Gosnell, which we've known about for some time now, and then the bombings, which were more fresh. And I read, O Lord, you hear the desire of the afflicted. You will strengthen their heart. You will incline your ear to do justice to the fatherless and the oppressed, so that man who is of the earth may strike terror no more. And just that phrase, terror no more, really resonated with me, and it gave me some categories for how to respond to God in the midst of the confusion that Tony described. So I feel like I took a lot of the really good things that Tony and Jonathan brought out of Scripture in the 2 days before and just tried to send it Godward and help people respond to our sovereign good God in prayer.
Well, thank all three of you for the responses you put forward, the thoughts you put there, the effort you put in the post. I was ministered to, I think many were ministered by that sequence of three posts that week after the Boston bombings, and this was all the confusion and looking for the suspects and the reports coming in on that.
We didn't actually plan that to begin with. It just kind of unraveled that way. So we're thankful for that.
A week ago today, we revisited the story of Ian and Larissa. Tony, you took the lead on corresponding with them and being in touch with them. Tell us about Ian and Larissa 1 year later.
Yeah, it was on the one-year anniversary. The story of Ian and Larissa is a video we released 12 months ago, and it's had over 1.5 million plays. It's now been translated into 16 different languages, and it's really spread. It's an amazing story. I don't think I can recount the story. If you haven't seen it, you'll definitely want to go find it. It's just simply called The Story of Ian and Larissa. And this was an opportunity to catch up with them 1 year later. They're working on a book project now. They're putting their story into a book that will be published by B&H, and I believe the manuscript is due next spring, so they've got about a year on that. And then we just asked them about their involvement in 3801 Lancaster, which is a documentary on the grisly crimes of the abortionist Kermit Gosnell. And it's been featured on CNN and Fox News, and they've actually played a role in getting behind it. It's kind of interesting just to catch up with them on that, and just to hear their feedback on the response to their own video in the past year. It's been really amazing to see the positive responses, the negative responses, and just how they've been processing it as a young couple.
And related to the Gosnell trial and convictions, we got a post coming from John Knight. Is that tomorrow, Jonathan?
Yeah, we hope he's running tomorrow. It's supposed that he wrote last week, actually, in the midst of the Gosnell trial. He's actually went back and made some changes after the verdict, and so I think that will be a helpful post. John is just, more than anyone I know, he is so dialed in when it comes to these issues of abortion and sanctity of life, and he spends lots of time at libraries reading articles. He's really dialed in the scholarship on these matters, and so he's got good perspectives on these things.
He does.
Speaking of sanctity of human life, two recent posts tackling that issue again. We want to keep that out there. It's not just a January Roe anniversary topic for us. It is a 365. We want a regular rhythm of revisiting the beauty and importance of sanctity of human life. We're honored again to have a post from Rachel Jankovic from Moscow, Idaho. Her post was The Real Life of the Pro-Life Home. Wonderfully written and helpful. You should check that on the site. We'll link to it in the blog copy here related to the podcast. And then also Pastor Piper here on The Fight for Life, Why We Keep Standing. This was an interview he did with a student in Asia who grew up at Bethlehem and was writing back, working on a student project, and sent several questions for Pastor John that he answered in writing. And several months later, we still had those in file. Thought this would be a helpful thing to kind of keep the message out there about the importance of the sanctity of human life. So we ran that, I believe it was just yesterday, and some really helpful stuff there about whether Roe is overturned or not, why we keep standing, why we keep fighting is where that interview ends. Speaking of John Piper, we got Marshall here, and this would be a great time to do an update on the spring at this point. Here we are, mid-May. There has been the winter-spring 2013 calendar. Marsh, you got any highlights for us from the last few months? And then if you could update us on where to from here for Pastor Piper.
This has been a really exciting 2013 for John already. He wrote a post recently called Leap and Weep, which has been his favorite way to express how he feels in the midst of this transition, just now recently stepping away from the pastorate. Weep because there's so much lost in the blessings of ministry in a local church, ministering the word, praying with people. He loves that. He's loved that for 30 years. He still loves it. And so there's a real grief and sadness in stepping away. But there's a sense in which his heart leaps right now because there's been a lot of burdens lifted in trying to organize and manage and pastor a 5,000 person church. And so in the lifting of the burdens, it's really freed him up now and in the future to, we think, bless lots and lots of people around the world with this message that God is most glorified in us and we are most satisfied in him. And he's had multiple opportunities to do that already. We were in Atlanta beginning of the year for Passion. We were in Raleigh for Advance 2013. We were in Orlando for the TGC pre-conference on missions and then the national conference on Luke. And then got to, he did a Spurgeon lecture there at RTS as well. And then we were just in Los Angeles to work with the guys at Reach Records, who are really working to try to train those that come to faith in the gospel through their music, to try to train them in theology and in doctrine of the word. So a really sweet opportunity to partner with them there in Los Angeles just last week. So it's been a really exciting few months. It's already just a taste of what these next few years might look and feel like as John gives himself more fully to wider ministry outside of the Twin Cities. And then as we look ahead, he's not slowing down. He moves a week from today, packing up the truck right now to head to Tennessee. And already we've got a very, very full year for him in terms of travel and writing. In the next couple of months, he's going to do a conference for Campus Outreach, their Global Leaders Conference in Orlando, Florida. Four talks there. We love Campus Outreach. We love the vision for what they're doing on college campuses.
Good people.
And so we're excited to invest his time and energy there with them this July. And then later in July, we're going to the Legacy Conference, which we're very excited about. It's something we've wanted to get to in the last few years and haven't been able to yet. But John's going to go and speak there, part of their team.
Maybe now would be a good time to just make a comment about the new podcast idea of usually our sermon podcast has been Pastor John's sermons from Bethlehem, but since he's, of course, not preaching at Bethlehem now, we're going to change that podcast to be now all of his new sermons, his wider ministry, different conferences and events. And the hope there that we've kind of settled on is that we're going to try to get the audio up from these messages as soon as possible. Within an hour, maybe day of, next day, we're going to try to get these messages in the podcast and on the site as soon as we can.
Yeah, one thing we've discovered recently as we kind of were evaluating it is when only audio is being captured on the messages, and there wasn't the prevalence of video online and at the different venues. And so video production takes longer, and we end up waiting longer and longer for, you know, getting the recorded imprint of these messages. So now we're thinking, all right, thank God for video. We're going to get video, make the most video. However, let's not forget audio, and that we are able to grab audio very quickly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So immediately after one of John's messages, we're going to try to grab that audio, get that immediately queued up into the podcast. So if you want to listen right away, we'll have that coming through the Sermons podcast going forward. Really excited about that new plan.
Yeah. So the Sermon podcast from now on will be the newest, the latest John Piper messages, which may mean there may be 2 or 3 weeks when there's not a new sermon, and there may be 1 week where there's 5 new sermons. It's just going to depend on his speaking.
So. That's right. And one thing to clarify with Marshall, so John's packing up the trucks, head to Tennessee. Why in the world is he going to Tennessee? Is he, you know, one question would be, is he disappearing like he did for 8 months with the leave of absence, or is this a different kind of thing?
It's going to be hard, I think, to even sense that John's gone. Mm-hmm. So we don't think of it as him being gone. He was looking for a way to step away from Minneapolis for a year to allow Jason Meyer and the leadership of Bethlehem to really establish himself. Mm-hmm. There without John kind of hanging in the shadows.
That's right.
And so that just was a place. He has family there, a house that he could rent affordably, and just plans to work full time for the year away in writing, speaking, and preparing for this next 5, 10, 15 years, whatever the Lord gives him.
Mm-hmm. And actually, we've filled up the calendar. He has an extraordinary number of travel events coming in the next year. So let's pick up back to where you were a few minutes ago. What is on the horizon? You mentioned Campus Outreach in July and the Legacy event in July. What else we got in the coming months?
Yeah, so shortly after that, we'll go to Liberty University to do a missions week there. So he'll speak on missions to college students. Loves to do that, one of his favorite things, I think. Then Desiring God National Conference, of course, on Lewis coming up, just announced today on the blog.
Let's put your pause on that. So today, we released the info publicly. Our national conference this fall, September
27,
28, and 9. Yeah, there we go. And the theme is, let me give it right here, Romantic Rationalist, God, Life, and Imagination in the Work of C.S. Lewis.
Very good.
And nicely. By popular demand, John Piper has agreed to do two plenary addresses. That's one of the feedback points we got over the years, that the folks wanted John to speak twice. So he's scheduled for Friday night, Sunday morning. The other main sessions are from Kevin Van Hooser, Douglas Wilson, Phil Ryken, and Randy Alcorn. Very excited about that. Mm-hmm. We got some seminar speakers coming in as well. Our own Joe Rigney from Bethlehem here in town, good friend of ours. You've seen some of his stuff on the blog. We love Joe. Also, N.D. Wilson, Nathan Wilson, Doug Wilson's son, who's a writer, will be coming in for the pre-conference. Colin Duriez, I'll ask him how he says it when he gets here. He is a Lewis Tolkien scholar. He's written the book on Lewis and Tolkien's friendship. Really excited to hear him talk about that. And then Lyle Dorsett from Beeson in Birmingham will be here as well, who's done a lot with Lewis on spiritual formation and other things. So we are pretty excited about this conference lineup. It's looking really good. I'd love for you to check it out on the website today. And there is a special super early bird discount kind of thing going on between now and June 1st. So if you know you're in, if you got it on your cal, you're going to be coming anyway. It is a super low conference rate between now and June 1 if you want to go ahead and schedule to join us. So now we're up to the end of September, National Conference 27-29. What's next?
Yep. Later in the year, we're headed to Moscow, Idaho for the Grace Agenda Conference with Doug Wilson. Then we'll do a three-week trip to Ethiopia and then to the UAE. So we're excited about that trip. John hasn't been to the UAE, and we think it could be a really valuable opportunity for him to invest, especially in the leaders that are serving there, ministering the word in a hostile place. And so we're excited about that trip. We're heading to East Lansing for a conference at University Reformed Church with Matt Chandler, Al Mohler, which should be very good. That'll be in December. And then really excited about the cross conference end of the year.
There you go.
This is a new thing that Pastor John's been a part of, and we think it could really have a ripple effect in the whole world. And so excited to see students come and just be set on fire to take the gospel to the nations.
That's good. Thanks for the update. Let's talk books. We got two new books that are out and available, and we got an ebook that's already out, another ebook on the way. So tell us about the two books. Tell us about the two ebooks.
The newest book is John Bloom's Not by Sight, which is a collection of narratives in Scripture that he kind of gives a poetic picture of, and that's very devotional. I think it'd be a very helpful book. So check that out. And then also John Piper's Hunger for God is a new edition, new cover. The content's all the same. It's just a new cover and a book on of course, fasting and an excellent, one of my favorite books by Pastor John. And then as far as ebooks goes, our last ebook was in April was Doctrine Matters. And that's an ebook of 10 sermons from John Piper that he preached the end of 2012, which kind of basically summarized his theological vision at Bethlehem over the past 33 years. And the idea behind that ebook is to make it extremely functional. So the table of contents actually has subject headers all throughout. Basically, the entire book is indexed there at the very beginning and hyperlinked. So you can use it to read straight through. You can also use it for reference to go and kind of tap on different chapter or different subject headers that interest you, or you can even read it devotionally. So
hyperlinked.
Yep.
Hyperlink. What's the other ebook we got coming?
We
got
to cut that.
No.
He said in the mic. We got to cut that.
We'll cut it.
The ebook now that we're working on, that we hope to release in the next couple of weeks, is the title is Awake to Wonder. It's celebrating the influence of C.S. Lewis. We had an idea for this early on and kind of took some time and thought we had to give up on it, and then in Mathis, you breathe some life back into it, and we basically have gone through and pulled the best excerpts from Piper's foundational books that are either quoting C.S. Lewis or alluding to Lewis, or is just very clearly has the imprint of C.S. Lewis. And it's amazing, the breadth of Lewis in Piper's work. It's not just like he's quoting, Lewis in Mere Christianity over and over again. The breadth is remarkable, and I think it'd be a really special book. Also, different from this ebook is that John Piper has contributed a 3,000-word introduction. So this is not just an ebook that we've curated. It's one that he actually has had a hand in developing. It's the closest thing that we have so far to an actual new book by by Piper.
So. This is the book we're most excited about to this point. But we're very excited about this, Awake to Wonder. And thank you to Crossway Books and to Multnomah for giving us permission, because some of the most important things John has ever written are sections where he quotes C.S. Lewis. Mm-hmm. And so we have four excerpts, I believe, from the book Desiring God. And Multnomah was kind to give us permission there. I think there's another one from Pleasures of God.
Yep.
Crossway Books gave us permission to print in this ebook the entirety of the chapter in When I Don't Desire God called How to Wield the World in the Fight for Joy, which is so Lewisian. I don't know if that's a real word other than I've heard Pastor Piper say it and he uses it.
Then
it's a very Lewisian chapter. And so we think this ebook really is the best of John Piper on C.S. Lewis. We're thrilled to have it in one place. Yeah. And John to write the new 3,000-word intros.
Yeah, you know, so. maybe some people feel the same way I do. Like, I knew Lewis through Piper, you know, and so a lot of this stuff that I'm reading is like, oh, this is how I got to know Lewis and how it's kind of turned to him. And I see now when you read Piper, it's just all in there. You know, you see so much of Lewis. And I think it'd be my favorite. Yeah, it's my favorite ebook.
Maybe we should finish up with, we should get a quick podcast update, but then maybe we should mention this Ascension Day. It was probably a dead giveaway when we posted something in April preparing the way for May 9th, Ascension Day. Brian Tabb, who's a professor at VCS, put together an extraordinary post for us on Ascension Day. Jonathan Parnell came back a few weeks later and talked about where is Jesus. Tony did the interview. Tell us quick about that interview for Authors on the Line.
Yeah, I did an interview with Garrett Scott Dawson, who's written kind of the theological standard work on the Ascension now. And then I also talked with Johnny Woodson, who is
Woodrow.
Woodrow, I'm sorry.
There you go.
And I talked with Johnny Woodrow, who is co-author of a new book on the Ascension with Tim Chester, and a really outstanding book.
Both of those books, so Dawson is Jesus Ascended.
That's right.
Woodrow and Chester's book is called The Ascension.
Yeah, Ascended, I think is just the title.
Those two books are both spectacular.
Yeah, they are.
But I would highly recommend those. If you don't have any familiarity or copies of those, I would really, really recommend that. That Woodrow Chester book, maybe the best 95-page book
I've read in a long time.
Yeah, I read it and loved it.
Yeah, I think Tony read it, and then he passed it on, and then it kind of got made a circle. And
it's one of those books where you get to page five, and you know this is a phenomenal book.
Gold.
You just know from the beginning.
Dead giveaway.
Page five with a dead giveaway.
Quick on the podcast. Recent theology refreshes, Tully and Tavision on regeneration.
Yeah,
love talking with Tully about that. Matt Reagan on the quote-unquote sacred secular divide. Again, Matt, he's one of our elders at Bethlehem Baptist Campus Outreach here in the Twin Cities. He's willing to give us some time to talk through that. We love having Matt when we can. Joe Beakey on the Puritans. I mean, if I was going to talk with anybody about the Puritans, it'd be Beakey. I'm so thankful for his willingness to share about that. And then one of our more memorable episodes, Toppy Colioso on spiritual warfare. You want to check that out if you haven't yet. One more thing to hit is the Authors on the Line with Douglas Wilson.
Yeah, Authors on the Line with Douglas Wilson on metaphor. I'm seeking to do a few podcasts with different guys who are helping the church to understand the role of the nonfiction imagination. And in this episode with Doug Wilson, we talk about metaphor, which a metaphor is, you know, to compare things, to say something is like, something is and is not something at the same time. So Jesus is a lamb. He's not a lamb, but he is a lamb. That's a metaphor. And what's interesting about Wilson is he sees how that lack of imagination plays out in public debates like homosexuality. When there's a loss of imagination, the marriage itself falls apart. Traditional marriage is seen as boring, as 1950s traditionalism. And what he says is, no, that kind of marriage that God has designed is metaphorical. It is the man marrying someone who is and is not like him. It's metaphorical. And once you lose that imagination in the public sphere, it's gone. Mm. Once you've lost that imagination, you can only relate to one who is the same as you, and that has public consequences. It's a little bit deeper, more intellectual of a podcast, but it's loaded with meaning, and it's worth listening to a couple, three times.
It's a very deep podcast. I'd really commit it. There's one point where you ask him a question, he goes, well, Tony, we can keep on talking about this as long as we admit I don't know what I'm talking about. It gets into very deep things. It's very well done. And there is a great insight there into, I think, Doug Wilson and what makes him controversial and so helpful as well. He talks about kind of surveying the landscape of Christianity 20 years ago or so, and talk about seeing the bland leading the bland. You know, how bland and uncreative Christians can be at times. And when they started their magazine, they wanted to be provocative, be that's colorful, right. Be creative. And that's very insightful into what makes Doug tick, and why so many love him, and why others misunderstand him.
Yeah, that was very fascinating. And Ask Pastor John, the podcast, we recorded our 100th episode.
Wow. All
and right. We're reaching about listen or play number 800,000. So we're getting close to a million plays in the next month or so. And so God has really been kind to bless us in these first 100 episodes, and really looking forward to the next 100 episodes, because we're just really getting started.
Thank you. Thank you for the work you put into the Ask Pastor John podcast. That's really spectacular. It's one of the best things we got going. Thank you, guys. And thank you, listener, for joining us behind the blog.